Hey everyone, welcome to Neighbor Science, the only political economy podcast that's also about superheroes.
Yes, and we've got an interesting one for you guys today.
That's Peter, I'm Ryan. Okay, let's go.
Oh yeah. We've got a lot to cover today, so we're not going to waste any time chit-chatting about anything other than the topic of the show, and today we're discussing the political...
Yeah, fucking right.
today we're discussing the political economy of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like I said, really, we do have a lot to cover. There are 19 movies in the franchise, and yeah. Also, we're not going to be covering the MCU in chronological order, and we're not going to go over any plot details, like the entirety of the plots and so on, because it makes it difficult to string various parts of the analysis together. Instead, we'll be looking at how major political economy points tie together. Now, as everyone who is alive knows, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has become one of the top earning movie franchises of all time. And by that, I mean that they've raked in nearly $17 billion at the box office in little over a decade.
I mean, is there actually a franchise that has made more money?
Well, arguably you could go with the Resident Evil thing, but that's not just movies. You know, Resident Evil is a gaming universe, a comic book universe, all of it put together. So it's really difficult to say.
And that's grossed more than the Marvel movies? Because, I mean, if you do that, then wouldn't you have to include the Marvel comics and all that shit too?
Exactly. So, and I mean, it's a difficult comparison. And then you've got to break it down by saying, well, do we count the stuff that Marvel did before, any other Marvel works, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Has it made more than Star Wars?
Well, so far the Force Awakens is still the number one earner globally.
Okay. I guess it's hard to compete with 19 fucking movies when you only have seven or eight.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, also you've got to take into account merchandising and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The figure I've pulled is purely box office numbers.
Okay.
With Infinity War has... It's either just reached 2 billion or it's about to reach 2 billion. So... Yeah, big cash cows these are.
What a fucking flop.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I tell you what, if only Infinity War had done as well as Solo, then at least Disney would be spending all the way to the bank. Now, when something becomes as prevalent in pop culture as the MCU has, it's important to not simply take it at face value. You know, we could easily dismiss it as CGI comic book drivel. But each of these movies has provided core messages that are being absorbed by millions of people all around the planet. I think you said on Twitter the other day to someone that when you're immersed in media, it starts to affect how you view the world. I said something along those lines.
That was a bunch of MLs in this Discord chat that I'm in, and they were insisting that idea that being immersed in culture affects the way you think is actually materialism. Yeah, I was just making fun of them for saying that.
Okay, but in all honesty, there is an iota of truth here. Now.
To the being immersed in a culture affecting your ideas, yes,
definitely.
But not the materialism
that's
part.
Materialism,
there's no iota of truth to that.
None whatsoever. It's really stupid. So what we want to do today is we want to take a look at what these messages are, as well as some interesting and sometimes disturbing facts about how the Marvel Cinematic Universe addresses political economy. So I think it's only right that we start right at the beginning, even though we may not necessarily follow the chronological order of the movies. And if we're going to start at the beginning, it has to be Iron Man.
Captain America.
Okay. No, I know
he's the first Avenger.
Technically not.
It says it Thor, in the title.
yes. But Thor, you see, is like over 1,500 years old. And
all right, so we'll start with Thor. Good idea.
No, we will start with Iron Man. He is the godfather of the MCU. Okay, so now, wait, before we get started, I just want to thoroughly depress our listeners by informing them that Robert Downey Jr. is reported to be making $100 million for Avengers 3 and 4. And in the decade leading up to these movies, he's gone from being a drug-addled has-been to amassing nearly $250 million.
A drug-addled is?
Yeah, he's now a drug-addled is.
What the fuck was that?
Right now, he is slated as being the most central actor in the MCU, and so it's apt that we begin our little analysis with him. For the record, although my very thorough viewpoints on all of these movies is obviously 100% accurate, I did not re-watch all of the movies. I have seen all of the movies because I am a comic book nerd from my childhood. So I'm kind of invested in the entire... But I
fortunately,
also...
filling out wikis about comic book movies is the new looking at trains.
Exactly. So I had plenty of stuff to work with. Now, this is not in anything. This is my own personal viewpoint. I think that in Iron Man, what we have is, and we've mentioned it on the show before, it's known as the great man myth. Because we start off the MCU with a look at the quintessential archetype for the great man myth. He is literally self-described as the billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, who is, throughout the first movie, brought to see the error of his ways and then uses his genius to develop technology that he can use to fight evil rather than be evil. Now, for those of you who have not seen the movie, I don't care about spoilers. I'm not going to give spoiler warnings here at all. If you don't want anything spoiled, stop listening to our show.
I mean, the movie's a fucking decade old, so if it hasn't been spoiled for you by now, I don't... Leave your cave, I guess.
Yeah, look, we're... Obviously, I am still going to... throughout the episode, we're going to cover Black Panther. We're going to cover... Infinity War, and those are still in the cinema, so technically there is a tiny chance that you haven't seen them, but if you haven't, it's because you don't care, and if you don't care, then you're not going to give a fuck about the
spoilers. Thanos kills everyone. So, spoiler done.
Okay, so Iron Man to power his Iron Man suit. Now, the reason we bring this up is because that's a technology that could conceivably disrupt the global energy industry and render oil wars obsolete. But
so, real quick, you cut out for a second. So Peter's talking about the arc reactor.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The infinite energy arc reactor that could disrupt the global energy industry and render oil wars obsolete. But while it's an admirable goal, we never see this happen.
I think this is like a really important and kind of understated point in the series, in that at any point in time, Tony could, you know, solve most conflict in the world because it all centers around control over energy. But rather than solve the world's problems immediately, he keeps it all for himself, lest it fall into the hands of someone who's like unworthy or something like that. So instead, he does the complete opposite and uses it to help keep the existing state structure in place and let it continue on with its business, albeit with the insurance policy of an invincible superhero with infinite energy, which is really
exactly.
cool. And I was thinking about this yesterday, that kind of applies also to the Marvel Universe in general, where like in we talked about My Hero Academia, like almost everyone is a superhero, almost everyone has superpowers, but in the Marvel universe only a select few people have superpowers. And so there's like this kind of idea that you know, some people are just, you know, they're the ones that should be gifted with the superhuman traits. I obviously did not complete this thought when I came up with it. But yeah, like there's a quite a stark, pun intended, contrast between this universe and the Hero Aki universe.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the MCU does have a very aristocratic feel to it. It's the idea that some people, by whatever measure, are entitled to preference, stardom, to get lots of stuff.
It's kind of a really like modern liberal idea, like, you know, having massively concentrated power is perfectly fine as long as it's in the right hands.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we can, you know, like, build up this huge executive branch as long as an Obama controls it.
Yeah.
Right. It's not going to be a problem.
It falls into the hands of a Trump, then suddenly, oh goodness, all this power needs to be broken up. And when Biden takes office, then it'll be fine again. So,
And then so like Captain America Civil War is when you get a Trump, where Tony has all this concentrated power and he sort of becomes ideologically bad, I guess.
Yeah.
And starts then using suddenly, it for evil. So
exactly. And then everyone suddenly goes, no, we're Team Cap because we're libertarian, you know?
Yeah.
Like the government.
So it's a good thing that everyone didn't have that power, because, you know, then something terrible could have happened.
Exactly. Now, as a side note here, and I really hope Elon Musk is listening, Tony Stark is really, really not the mega genius he's portrayed as in the movie. The repulsors used for flight were based off Stark Industries' Jericho missile, which was designed by their engineers. The avionics and the heads-up display are based off the prototype SIXF-39 fighter that is developed by Stark Industries and their engineers. And the shoulder-mounted missiles use advanced facial recognition and microcontroller technology that is already developed by Stark Industries, not by Tony himself. The armor is the same alloys used in the SI upgrades to the M1 Abrams that was developed in 2007. And the proprietary high-temperature material used in Stark Aerospace Gamora orbital bombardment vehicle. These are the things that make up the Iron Man suit. He hasn't invented anything, okay?
Well,
he's literally
just Stark Industries, so... You know, he's Stark.
Yeah.
So
he's Stark.
Pretty much he did invent them.
I don't know why they bother calling it SpaceX or Tesla. They should just call it Musk Space and Musk Cars. He invented it all, you know. So that was just
Everything's cutting out now.
Is obviously the strong relationship between Stark Industries and obviously Tony himself, relationship they have with the military. It's from my point of view, it's first of all very, very problematic, because it's a reflection of real world, and how capitalist industry is the weapons industry for a at the end of the day, the industrial giants these days are, as we've alluded to before, weapons developers. So,
yeah, I mean, capitalism can't exist without capitalizing on the state's power to commit violence, and the state cannot commit violence in modern times without a massive weapons industry keeping it ahead of the ability of other states. Competing states to commit violence. So capitalism and the weapons industry are inextricable from each other in today's era.
For the record, we're going to be touching on that in next week's episode. So, I don't want to...
Yeah, sort of, but yeah.
Like, next week's episode is not about military, but there's a very decent point that I want to bring up next week. So we're not going to segue into that now. We're going to talk about Tony's dysfunctional relationship with women in general, and especially his assistant, Pepper. Now, women throughout the movie are treated like sexual objects for Tony's gratification. And in Pepper's case, she is his mother, his nanny, his assistant, and he is basically a toddler. Coddled because he has money and he is a, air quotes, tech genius.
It's weird how he has more mommy issues than fucking Batman.
Yeah. And for anyone who's ever listened, I fucking hate Batman.
Pepper!
Exactly, dude.
What did you say?
I
can't remember the lines from the movie. Believe it or not, I'm dead sober right now, so.
I don't believe you. Okay, so so there's a scene in the movie where a reporter comes up to him and she holds him accountable and tries to talk about how his company sells weapons that are fueling conflicts in the Middle East and everything, and...
Listen, bitch, I don't pay you to talk, okay? That's what Tony Stark sounds like.
Yeah, exactly like that. That was a very, very good impersonation. Jesus, Ryan.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm walking here!
Oh, God, you'd fit in so well in New York. Okay, so that's Iron Man 1. For the sake of brevity, we're going to move right along to Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Ryan, why don't you take this one?
Sure. So in Iron Man 2, we discover that Stark Industries did not create the first arc reactor by itself. Tony Stark's father worked with a Soviet scientist named Anton Vanko to create the original prototype. So, America stealing from the Soviet Union once again. When Howard found out that Anton wanted to make money out of the invention. Kind of a reversal there. It's weird.
Yeah.
I already lost my place. He had Anton deported back to the Soviet Union and took credit for creating the arc reactor by himself. So,
wow, I wonder if a capitalist has ever done that before.
Yeah. Anton could not build an arc reactor for the Soviet government on his own and was sent to Gulag for 20 years. So the suggestion here is that Soviet scientists are money seekers while American capitalists were philanthropic. And while this is a strong narrative point within the great man myth, it doesn't remotely match with reality, obviously. Agreed there. Peter wrote all the notes for this episode, by the way. So these are not completely my own thoughts.
Except where I'm completely wrong, those are your thoughts.
Yeah. Tony has to appear at a congressional hearing for owning and developing the Iron Man suit, which is seen as a threat to national security, which it isn't. There he embarrasses a longtime rival owner of weapons manufacturer Hammer Industries. Yeah, that shit was funny. While avoiding having a suit taken away because he argues that he and the suit are the same entity. This is an argument that obviously never would have worked if Tony wasn't a billionaire. So the most obvious analogy to this whole trial is that the government is coming to take away our guns, but since this is America, he gets to say that guns are part of his identity, kind of an extension of his dick, if you will. Throughout the congressional hearing, Tony touts himself as a deterrent to armed conflict. But it's a deterrent that nobody else is allowed to have, because when a great man has the deterrent, it's good. But in anyone else's hands, it's, potentially evil. So this is emphasized by Tony hacking into the various secret, I'm guessing this government installations. I don't remember what happened exactly, in order to expose various failed attempts at creating the Iron Man suit. Oh, yeah. When he goes... Yeah, he shows video from other weapons developers trying to create Iron Man suits. Yeah.
Building.
government, like a billionaire sits there and literally hacks the US government, and there's no consequences whatsoever. It's all good.
No, it's fine.
Watch it back.
Man, you're cutting out of this one too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's annoying. All right, we'll just keep going. Okay, the movie spends a lot of time talking about legacy, and yet we see that Tony's legacy is one of capitalist apologism, and taking the wrong side of the gun debate with a healthy dose of some Red Scare historical revisionism thrown in. Yeah, pretty fair summary.
Yeah. Yeah. Woohoo! I rock.
Yeah.
Okay.
People who care about their legacy are very weird and extremely damaging to human civilization.
Yeah, I'm not kind of weirded out by people who carry on about check out my legacy and I will live vicariously through my children. It's weird and creeps me out. Okay, so moving right on to Iron Man 3. By the third movie, we've already been introduced to the Avengers, and now we see Tony using the arc reactor technology to power dozens of suits. He's become very Avengers, battled an invading race of aliens in New York. We find that
it's pretty racist there.
I'm not like I didn't want to touch too much on the on the invasion of aliens.
Yeah, look, just because an immigrant is not the same race as you doesn't mean that they're invading, you know. They're just coming to the same place as you.
Yes. And
you know who is invading, though? You know who is invading? The military. They do that all the time. Anyway, yeah, continue.
Okay, so we now have... We now find that a private military contractor has been conducting dangerous experiments on injured military personnel, and the treatments cause them to explode, and when they explode, the explosions are depicted as the work of a terrorist organization.
I bet the CIA was fucking sweating bullets when they saw this. Like, oh, fuck. Oh, God. Did they find out?
Are people gonna like connect the dots here? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Okay. So of course the U.S. government isn't actually interested in ever doing anything about it. Well, nothing effective anyway. So when Tony's personal bodyguard, who's also his driver, Happy
Hulk Hogan,
when he's injured, Tony decides to go after the terrorists himself. And there's that scene where he's like. Here's my address, come and get me. Like, stupidest thing anyone's ever done, in my opinion. Okay, so, of course, there are no terrorists initially. It's all just a government cover-up. And then we later find out that Tony is responsible for driving the private contractor who's responsible for the terrorist attacks to the point of madness and depression in which we find him starting up these terrorist-style experiments. So essentially what we've got here is corporate America using government funding to conduct unethical human testing so that corporate America can swoop in to save the day at the end. And that is Iron Man 3.
And capitalism in a nutshell.
Exactly. Now, we were going to include The Incredible Hulk, but it was such a terrible fucking movie that I'm actually scratching it off the entire list. And
I actually don't remember it being that bad. It just doesn't have anything interesting for this episode in it.
It's not that it just doesn't have anything for the episode. It's that the it's not of the same style and caliber as the rest of the MCU movies. So even Marvel are like, yeah, we kind of regret doing that one. But they are post-credit scenes. So
maybe I just think it's good because the Eric Bana Hulk movies were so fucking bad.
Yeah. What? Movies? No, he only did one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a relief.
This was the second
Mandela
one.
Effect.
And Edward Norton pissed off so many people on set by trying to rewrite the fucking movie like he does in every movie that he's a part of, that they dropped him and they went with Mark Ruffalo by the time they got to the Avengers.
Okay. See, I must have slipped into a different timeline, because in my universe, Eric Bana wrote the other Hulk movie. There was no Edward Norton one, so...
I hear you. Welcome back to this reality, though.
Yeah. Curious, in the 90s, there was a movie where a famous black comedian played a genie. What was the name of that movie? I need
I'm
to know
pretty
this.
Sure, what? I'm pretty sure it was Shazam? Something like that?
Okay, and which comedian was it?
Everyone knows that it was not a comedian. It was a basketball player.
So which one? Like Michael Jordan or?
No, it was Shaquille O'Neal, who very much looked like that stand-up comedian Sinbad.
Okay, because in my universe, the movie's called Alakazam and it's Chris Tucker.
You see.
I actually have a picture of it if you want me to prove.
Yeah, I think add that to the show notes.
Okay.
And then you can show the audience.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we've done with the segue that we said we were not going to do, let's move right on to Captain America.
The second Avenger. So here we finally reach the true Manichaean good versus evil narrative that has come to dominate superhero movies. So Captain America is a literal super soldier, an ubermensch, one might say, that has been juiced up by Tony Stark's father, Howard. He's off to fight World War II against some Nazis, including one branch of Hitler's regime known as Hydra. Someone pointed out that it's really weird that they made the villain Hydra and not just Nazis in the Captain America movies, like as if they were going to offend someone by like making it Nazis instead of Hydra.
No, well, I think they were trying to stay true to the original comic books, in which
but the original Captain America comics, he fought Nazis.
But in subsequent and more popular story arcs, the main opponent he has is Red Skull, and Red Skull is the leader of Hydra, and I mean, I don't know if everyone will be aware of this, but in the most recent arc that is now being retconned, it turns out that Captain America himself is an agent of Hydra, it pissed off a lot of Marvel fans.
Dumb.
Very, very dumb.
Very not gay.
In the Captain America movie, you actually see Hydra targeting the Nazi strongholds as part of their plan for world domination. Because Hydra is not actually Nazi, they're fascist. I realize that for a lot of people, the distinction is difficult, but... while there is a kind of supremacism involved, it's not the same kind of supremacism that you see Hitler have. Hydra has more of a strong focus on a cult than the Nazis ever did.
Despite I thought the Nazis were actually obsessed with occult stuff, though.
Some of them were, and I think that's where the whole concept of Hydra came from. But Hitler himself was, like, not interested in that kind of stuff. I remember checking this out several years ago, and I can't remember all the details, but I do know that there's quite a few lines of distinction that can be drawn between Hydra and
the Nazis. Other Nazi dipshits that were into, you know, fairies and whatever?
Yeah.
Okay. Captain America is the true patriot. Who fights fearlessly for his country, and Red Skull is the evil Nazi leader of Hydra who doesn't care about their country and is cowardly and has a small dick. I'm sure I don't have to get into why patriotism isn't much better than Nazism. especially when your love is for a country founded on slavery and genocide, not just one that did it later. And grown using some of the most effective imperialism in history, continuing to today and continuing to kill millions of people all the time. An interesting moment in the movie for the author, Peter, was when Captain America was still in the U.S., basically acting as propaganda until he's taken to Europe to entertain the troops. So while in the U.S., his main job is to advertise for the weapons industry and the war effort.
Yeah. Well done, Captain America. Apparently patriotism is selling guns.
Yeah.
Which oddly is still an ongoing theme in the U.S. Like, you see it all the time.
Yeah, we love our steel dicks.
Exactly. Okay, next up, we're going to look at the first Thor movie. Now, Thor, we get to touch on the subjects of inheritance, monarchy, and colonialism. For those of you that looked at it and said, ooh, Chris Hemsworth, muscles. Yeah, there's a lot more to it than Chris Hemsworth's pecs. Asgard is a
Keep it
kingdom.
Down, my girlfriend.
Yeah, my wife's not that impressed by him. So, and I've got nothing to fear. She likes my belly. So it's all good. Now, Asgard is a literal kingdom. Thor is told from an early age that he will inherit the kingdom. And what he will inherit is his father's power over the nine realms, which is taken almost directly from Norse mythology, in case you thought that there might not be religion involved here.
All right, let's go over all the nine realms, all right? You got Vanheim, right? You got Helheim. You got Niflheim. You got Alfheim. You got another Alfheim, but it's really about dwarves. You got Midgard, Jotunheim. Let's see, that's seven. I got two more. I'm so close.
Asgard, obviously.
Asgard, okay. And then the last one. Shit, man. I can't get it.
Come on, Ryan, you're doing so well. You're doing so well.
Did I say, I said Vanheim? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't matter. You, like, I'm going to give you that ninth one just for managing eight. Because honestly, I've watched the movie like five times and I couldn't do it.
Oh, I know this from God of War.
Oh, awesome. Because you've been playing God of War 4, which I'm dying to play, but yeah.
No, I stopped playing that, and I've been playing Samurai Warriors Spirit of Sanada. So I'm also an expert on feudal Japanese history during the Warring States period.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hopefully we can do an episode on that sometime soon.
Yeah. You want to know who all Tokugawa's retainers are? I got you.
No. Not now. We're segueing like crazy. and it's weird because that's something we never do. Okay, so in this movie, Odin has learned that war and conquest leads to rebellion and rebellion in the conquered territories, and that eventually threatens his base of power. So when Thor's reckless actions lead to a possible insurrection by the Frost Giants of Jotunheim, Odin banishes Thor to Midgard, Earth, after stripping him of his powers, so that Thor can learn to pull himself up by his bootstraps. Now, by learning to focus on the bigger picture, Thor has his powers restored, much like a young Jim Walton had to go and work in retail stores before he could be given the keys to the Walmart kingdom. And much like Thor's experience. Yeah, yeah. And it's a lot like Thor's experience, where the only real hardship faced was that there was no ability to effectively wield power. And that is literally all you need to take from the Thor movie.
All right, so next is the Avengers. Avengers was a very big moment in the MCU, not only because it was a combination of multiple superhero franchises into one single monolithic piece of celluloid, But because this marked the point at which Disney decided it wanted in on the action. So when Avengers pulled in $1.5 billion at the global box office, Disney decided it was no longer satisfied with just having distribution rights, so they bought Marvel. Within the movie itself, we see the introduction of far-right authoritarianism in the form of Loki, and this obviously had to be countered by the neoconservatism of S.H.I.E.L.D. Excuse me. S.H.I.E.L.D. pulls together a team of Earth's mightiest heroes who quickly devolve into squabbling and then outright break apart when they find out S.H.I.E.L.D. is trying to develop weapons based on the Tesseract, which is a source of infinite energy. S.H.I.E.L.D. tries to defend this by saying it's all Thor's fault for being an alien that threatens existing society. But in the next movie, we'll get into why this is bullshit.
Okay, so might as well just get straight into the next one. And that's Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier.
The best Marvel movie.
Yeah, all jokes aside, it's maybe second best. I still love Black Panther.
Well, I'm racist, so I like this one better.
Okay, fair enough. In Winter Soldier, we learn that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been infiltrated by the fascist Nazis, Hydra, at the highest levels. And this explains the secretive push for weapons development that we saw in the Avengers movie. Hydra's overall plan is to bring about a utopia. And please, I put that in the heaviest of air quotes. Which might seem
more like
admirable.
A dystopia.
Now, the idea of them bringing about a utopia, it might seem admirable to the casual observer, but this is a trend throughout the MCU that bears looking at more closely. The idea is that in order to create something new and worthwhile, you must first destroy the old. And that the answer to this version of evil, which must necessarily include mass genocide, is
conservatism.
Yeah, there we go. And gradual reformism as a public policy, and of course aggressive militarism as a non-public strategy. Now, the main theme of Winter Soldier is freedom, which is of course apt as a theme for a Captain America movie. But this form of liberalism is sold as the only possible alternative to the fascism being proposed by Hydra and the neoconservatism being actively pursued by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Now, Peter, it sounds like you're criticizing freedom to me.
No. Let's be very clear. I like the idea of freedom, but I don't like the idea.
So you like the idea of freedom, but not, you don't really like it. I see. Okay.
Yeah. No. I'm obviously far left and right wing. I am the horseshoe come together when it comes to authoritarianism.
Okay. So you think that just because Hydra disagrees with you and has a different opinion, that a superhero has the right to punch them? Is that what you're saying?
Right in the face, motherfuckers.
Because I value freedom more highly than anyone, and I think that the right thing to do is to, have a vigorous debate with Hydra.
Honestly, you might be right. It might be better to just give Hydra a platform from which to speak.
Exactly.
Look,
and make sure they have armed guards in front of them too.
Yes.
We need to have armed guards that are heavily infiltrated by members of Hydra, as noted in famous FBI report, and then we need to put those guys in between all the people, between Hydra and the people that Hydra says they want to murder to death.
Exactly.
That's the way to have real, true freedom.
I think I might have to go with your version rather than mine.
Okay, good.
I've been convinced.
See, debate freedom wins. We disagreed, we were civil about it, and now you're on my side. So, see how that works? You didn't have to punch me at all. I didn't have to punch you at all.
Yeah. Listen, can you go onto the Patreon, the Patreon page, and please just purge any blacks or Jews or women Chinese that are currently supporting us.
Yep, will do.
Okay, at the beginning of the movie, we're introduced to Project Insight, which is almost ridiculously similar to Palantir Gotham, which our listeners will remember from the Peter Thiel episode. It's software that allows intelligence agencies to monitor anyone, anywhere, all the time. Project Insight is then used to preemptively strike targets identified by the software. I don't know how they managed to get away with this at all. But it could be because, you know, they try and sell it as a good thing.
And because Obama was president.
True. And let's face it, those illy carriers are essentially giant drones that can be flown from anywhere. Yep. Now, this is the neoconservatism of S.H.I.E.L.D., which they sell as the cost of freedom. And by the end of the movie, we understand that this is just a guise for the fascism of Hydra. And this leaves the oversimplistic worldview of Captain America as a kind of third way. In opposition to S.H.I.E.L.D., Cap states that we shouldn't stop a war before it starts. So this is a relatively typical sentiment for a soldier to have. And it obviously ignores the complex geopolitics of diplomacy. Why should we? Trade wars are good, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Also worth noting is that by this time, Stark Industries has obviously given up on giving up their weapons development, since they're actually responsible for creating the Falcon flight suit used by Cap's buddy Sam Wilson, also known as the Falcon. They developed the sonic cannons that were used against the Hulk in the Hulk movie. And that's all we need to know about the Hulk movie.
I thought it was implied that the flight suit was from, like, the Iraq War.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you think that?
I thought he was supposed to be in some special unit that was deployed to the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, but the weapons being supplied to the military are all supplied by Stark Industries.
Right, I'm not contesting that. I'm contesting the timeline between Tony saying they're going to give up making weapons and when the weapons are actually supplied. It doesn't matter anyway, because it doesn't really undermine your point, because the Hulk one.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But at the same time, Falcon doesn't don the suit in Afghanistan. He becomes part of an experimental program more or less at the time that he finishes up his tour there and is heading back to the U.S., where he finishes off his training. And by that time, Iron Man has already sworn off weapons development, apparently, publicly.
Everyone listens to this podcast to hear us debate canon, so giving the fans what they want right now.
Woohoo! Okay. What's next?
Avengers Age of Ultron. Sorry, my mouth is full of vapor. In Age of Ultron, we find out that Tony is still riding his high horse, thinking that the great man myth is true and that he alone can save the world, just like Elon Musk. He develops an AI with the purpose of protecting the world, much like Elon Musk and his buddy Peter Thiel are trying to do by funding the OpenAI group and Palantir Technologies. Is that really what the OpenAI thing is for? Or are they afraid that AI is going to kill them all?
The whole idea behind, and this is the thing, is Musk talks a big game because he wants people afraid of AI, because if they're afraid of AI, they're going to support any kind of initiative to develop AI that is ethical. And that's what the OpenAI thing is all about, is to develop AI. Wow.
No one knows ethics better than Elon Musk and Peter Thiel.
Exactly.
Jesus fucking Christ. You know, how come no one ever suggests that when AI comes online, it's going to, like, look at the state of the world and see that the class system is fundamentally immoral and kill all billionaires and free the masses? How come that's never a scenario that people posit?
Yeah, you've got to remember that people like Elon Musk do not think of the poor people as people. So when they say that AI is a big threat to humanity, they mean billionaires.
Ah, okay. That makes sense. All right. Where was I? Tony's plan goes horribly wrong, and the program comes to life and figures that the only way to protect Earth is to kill all humans. Wow, so he invented Bender. That's cool. The movie essentially addresses the dangers of letting super capitalists toy with potentially harmful technologies. Yes, it does. A pair of Russian kids who hate Tony Stark because his weapons killed their father. Well, you know, a little unreasonable there. Team up with Ultron until they figure out that his plan is to destroy humanity, at which point they decide to join the Avengers.
Now they just sound like class traitors to me. For those of you that are not aware of the little connection, and one of the reasons that everyone who is a big fan of the MCU is very happy that Disney is making a bid to buy Fox is because Fox owns the rights to the father of the pair of Russian kids, who happens to be Magneto.
So Magneto sired Russian children?
Yes. Yes, and one of them is actually in the X-Men universe, the quick dude, Quicksilver. Which is funny because you have Quicksilver, and Quicksilver are both, they've also both been in a superhero movie before, namely Kick-Ass. Hmm. They were best buddies in Kick-Ass, and then later they split into two separate Marvel universes, and both portrayed the same character, even though the one in the MCU is never allowed to refer to Magneto in any way, form, or manner. And so they just snuck it in there that Stark killed their father with his weapons.
And I thought this universe was confusing because you put a basketball player in a movie about a genie.
Yeah, no, yours is much simpler. Welcome to Chaosverse. So they join the Avengers, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So the sister, who has mind manipulation powers, gets into the Avengers' heads and sends Hulk on a rampage through Joburg, South Africa, where he and Iron Man have a CGI battle with Iron Man and his Hulkbuster armor. They destroy a crapload of property, causing rolling blackouts. And this is all starting to add up, as we will soon see in Civil War. The general public are beginning to fear the Avengers. They may be right, too, since the Ultron AI has figured out that to destroy humanity, he has to lift a city up off the face of the Earth, then drop it from a very reasonable height to create a shockwave that will mimic a gigantic asteroid site. Strike, sorry. The Avengers manage to stop him, but not without destroying the entire city.
So. Well done, Avengers. They're great at that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So really bad idea to let super capitalists toy around with high tech. It destroys lives.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do it. In fact, don't let super capitalists do anything. God, just put them in a box and then take that box and put it on a boat and then take that boat out into the middle of the ocean and then push the box off of the boat.
Yes, that's actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
And then, except that they'll probably end up floating off to Madagascar then.
Oh, yeah. Make sure the box does not float. That's the other thing that I forgot to mention.
Yes. Fill it with water before you push it off the boat.
Or just put a hole in it.
And not a breathing hole, an actual sinking hole. Okay.
Yeah.
So, jumping straight into Civil War then, the Avengers are now facing government regulation. They've caused so much damage that they need oversight. Captain America is still smarting from the events in Winter Soldier, so he doesn't trust the government to oversee them and doesn't like the idea of all the red tape that they'll have to face when trying to save people. So
that reminds me, I think we mentioned this in like the very first episode, but it's interesting to me that the difference between the Winter Soldier and Captain America, Captain America and Winter Soldier are both, they both come from super soldier programs, but one is supposed to be almost irredeemably evil, and one is the best goody good boy in the Marvel Universe. So, you know, American chemical engineering and Ubermensch good, Soviets cybernetically engineering an Ubermensch bad.
Yes,
that's the message of the Captain America and Winter Soldier thing.
Yes, definitely. 100% agreed.
Yeah.
Now, so essentially by now, the neoconservative Captain America has become a libertarian, basically screaming throughout the movie that taxation is theft.
Yeah, he's always mining Bitcoin, saying, what if the child consents?
Oh, God, that was fun. Okay, so Tony Stark, on the other hand, is feeling kind of guilty since it was basically his fault that an entire city got destroyed and another one got busted up pretty badly. Hulk is missing. Thor has gone back to Asgard and the Avengers are basically in a shambles. So the movie becomes about libertarianism and belief in the free market of superpowers versus regulation of superpowers in order to protect the innocent civilians who become the casualties of the conflict surrounding superpowers. Now, this is an issue that is never actually resolved throughout the movie. You end up having these two teams that beat each other up, and then by the end of it, you've got
caused a bunch of collateral damage. And
Although, interestingly, they go and fight in what seems to be a very fucking empty airport.
Yeah,
like why? Why did you choose the empty airport? Like, I don't understand why this is the ultimate fighting ground.
Because they needed a way to get to that secret plane that was at the empty airport for some fucking reason.
Yeah. Oh, God. But by the end of the movie, you've got Tony Stark fighting against Captain America and the Winter Soldier, and they're fighting, and they basically beat each other up quite badly, and then they part ways. And the issue of who's right, the libertarian or the pro-government dude, like, meh. Is basically the end of it.
Yeah. Gotta side with the libertarian on this one, though.
Yeah. So you're Team Cap, are you? You're Team Cap. Well,
yeah,
I am Team Thor.
I think hating cops is more important than hating bosses, honestly.
I think I should be allowed to hate both. Equally.
I mean, yeah, but if you have to side with someone who loves cops or someone who loves bosses, I will side with the person who loves bosses, because the bosses can't really exist without the cops anyway. So libertarians are kind of their own worst enemy at a certain point.
I won't disagree with that at all. Okay, so next up, we're gonna talk about Thor: The Dark World.
Yeah. Sure.
Did you see it?
I did, and I do not remember a single thing about it. I'm pretty sure I saw it in theaters too, so it's not like it was like in the background on TV or something like that. I actually went to a physical place to specifically to watch the movie. Don't remember anything about it.
I paid a shitload of money for something I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't remember anything about the first Thor either, except for that scene in the cafe where he throws the coffee cup against the ground.
I like
which
this,
made me laugh.
This beverage. Give me more.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, that was funny. But I don't remember anything about it, except Natalie Portman's in it for some reason. And yeah, maybe some stuff happened. I don't know. Anyway, we begin the second Thor movie in an Asgard that has undergone a kind of isolationism thanks to Thor destroying the Bifrost at the end of the first Thor movie. See, I don't remember that. In order to keep Loki from destroying the Nine Realms. This act of isolationism causes major upheaval throughout the Nine Realms, and Thor is forced to bring peace through a campaign of warfare that subdues imminent insurrection in Asgard's various colonies. So the film also explores the mechanics of a love-based relationship between Thor and, I'm guessing that's Natalie Portman, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Specifically from a monarchy perspective, with Odin repeatedly telling Thor that it cannot work because of politics. This plays heavily into the isolationist core of the movie, as Thor is discouraged from pursuing a relationship with a non-Asgardian. It's the age-old monarchist tactic of keeping the royal bloodlines incestuous. Oh, pure. Sorry. Pure. That's what you wrote.
No. I prefer yours. So pretty much every time we see Thor, you just need to keep in mind the fact that it is monarchy and feudalism.
Yeah. They need to preserve their jawline.
Okay. So, Guardians of the Galaxy is what we're going to look at next. And this is a little bit of a longer one, so I'm going to try and get through it as quickly as possible. Guardians of the Galaxy is a bit of a standout in the realm of the MCU political economy analysis, because the Guardians themselves are essentially a group of rogues and misfits. A band of misfits who have all lost almost everything in their lives, only to find an inadvertent family in each other. The political aspects of the movie only barely relate to the protagonists, but since that's the focus of this episode, we will touch on them as quickly as possible. Ronan is Kree. I want you to remember that name because it's going to become important in February of 2019 when Captain Marvel gets released. So see if you can remember that name, Kree, for the next 8 months. So Ronan is a Kree accuser. And the Kree accusers hate the planet of Xandar specifically, and Nova Empire in general. Ronan is chasing after the Infinity Stone that Star-Lord stole because he wants to give it to Thanos so that Thanos will wipe out the planet of Xandar. The reason for this is that Xandar has been, the entire Nova Empire has been at war with the Kree Empire for like almost 1,000 years or whatever. Now, there are numerous examples all over the internet of people trying to say that the Kree are a fictional representation of radical Islam. Or even in one case, I saw them depicted as World War II Japan. But this ignores the very complicated system that makes up the Kree Empire. Ronan is essentially the general of the Kree fundamentalist military, known as the Accusers. It is his role within his society to be the representative of the fundamentalist Kree. But not all Kree feel the same way he does. In fact, very few do. Since the Kree are split into multiple sects that are only connected to one another by their common race. And none of the sects are willing or historically able to take responsibility for the action or the views of another sect. In this regard,
so you got your Sunnioids and you got your Shiatrons, and they just don't get along. And it's important to understand the politics of the Kree to understand these sectarian differences.
When you look at it this way, it would be more apt to compare the Kree to Islam in general than to any specific militaristic or fundamentalist sect within Islam. The planet Xandar, on the other hand, is the capital of the Nova Empire, which is multicultural and essentially the imperial multicultural dream. Again, there have been many comparisons made to the US, but I'll be the first to admit that I don't know enough about the Nova Empire. I haven't read the Nova comics. So I don't really understand how they're being depicted in the MCU. And so I can't really verify that comparison. It does seem like they're either a depiction of the US or possibly of Israel. Those would probably be the closest comparisons. So it doesn't really matter how much I know about the Nova Empire. The Nova Corps is the military arm of the Nova Empire, and they feature quite heavily throughout the story. The Guardians are first brought together when they are arrested by the Nova Corps, and then later, after escaping the prison, they aim to stop Ronan from destroying Xandar and work alongside the Nova Corps. And in return for helping to save Xandar, their records are expunged, and their ship gets repaired, and they get told, please don't commit any more crimes. Now, the whole movie very aptly illustrates how the small team of misfits are co-opted into fighting a war they were not a part of originally, and how complex macro political power struggles can envelop even those that are not necessarily part of those power struggles. Yes, I'm very much talking about Rojava.
Yeah. So is Ronin the PLO?
I suppose you could go that direction. I feel like maybe the better description would be ISIS straight up.
But, okay.
Yeah. It's complicated, and it's not a perfect analogy to draw to actual existing political turmoil.
Yeah, I guess there's that whole cleansing thing that he's into, or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on from that one and talk about Ant-Man.
Yeah. So in Ant-Man, I'm going to go ahead and move this heading down. We meet Hank Pym, who is the real genius inventor of the MCU. His technological innovations.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the real one. His inventions are so profound, they literally break physics as we know it. Compared to Hank's discovery of the Pym particle, which allows him to reduce the distance between atoms, Tony Stark's suit is just clever packaging of gimmicky weapons tech. Early on in the movie, we find out Pym doesn't trust the Starks because Tony's dad tried to steal the Pym suit early on in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s history. This lays the groundwork for a movie that details hostile corporate takeovers, whistleblowing, and the difficulties faced by people with criminal records in reintegrating with society. Yeah, damn, there is a lot of themes in that movie, huh?
Actually think it's one of the better movies. It's like my top three out of 19.
Yeah, it's pretty underrated. I think the problem is, like,
people forget who the villain is,
and I never cared about them.
Oh, yeah, it's the quintessential Marvel villain problem.
They've got
the throwaway villains except Loki.
Yeah, like, if that movie had a Killmonger, it would be pretty good, I think.
Even though Killmonger was essentially a throwaway villain?
Yeah. Well, Killmonger is the best villain in the fucking series, by far. Anyway, Paul Rudd, who was jailed after blowing the whistle on his former employee, Vista Corp, and stealing millions of dollars from the company and funneling those funds back to defrauded customers, is taken from his family. So, Paul Rudd, I think, is the actual hero in the Marvel Universe. His wife then pulls a dick move and marries a cop, even though Scott basically did the greatest thing a hero can do. By Scott, I mean Paul. Pym's daughter works for Pym Tech, which was taken over by his former protege in what amounted to a hostile takeover, and whose aim is to weaponize the Pym particle. So now we have Stark Industries, S.H.I.E.L.D., and Pym Tech, all as major weapons developers. We're beginning to see a trend within the MCU. And Cross, the current CEO of Pym Tech, is planning to sell to Hydra. So fascism, neoliberalism, neoconservatism, and capitalism in general are the main political economic ideologies running through the MCU, and thus far the strongest pushback against these is cowboy libertarianism. Yeah.
Yeehaw! Do we want to talk about Doctor Strange?
No.
Do the
change to the main character thing, but other than that, there's not really
much. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so in order to appeal, look, there's not much political economy within the movie itself, so we're going to look at the movie from the outside and say that Marvel has realized that China is the fastest growing cinema audience in the world, and they're putting up like 15 cinemas a week throughout the country, and because there's this massive market that is very undertapped at the moment, they want to make their movies as China friendly as possible. So when Doctor Strange had the one of the main characters is essentially a Tibetan monk, and that was going to piss off the Chinese government big time. So they changed it from a Tibetan monk to a Celtic Buddhist monk.
Makes sense.
Yeah, perfect sense. It pissed off a lot of the Marvel fans, but Marvel didn't give a shit because they made a fat load of money, like $110 million.
Which I wish they just leaned all the way into that and made her a white yogi who said, like, namaste all the time.
It reminds me of the movie with Mike Myers, The Love Guru, where and my wife was the first one to point this out to me. I never latched onto it, that throughout the movie he keeps saying Mariska Hargitay, and that's literally the name of an Indian celebrity.
That's funny.
Anyway, so yeah, China represented like 15% of Doctor Strange's global box office earnings. So this is not a small market, and Marvel and Disney know this, and so they've been changing a lot of the storylines to make sure that they don't offend the Chinese and they don't offend the Chinese government, and that their movies will do relatively well in the Chinese markets.
Well, hopefully China gets better taste in movies at some point soon.
Wow. I wouldn't go there. their movie industry is healthy and booming, and they don't make superhero movies like Hollywood.
Oh, I'm sure their film industry is fine. I'm just saying the ones that they like from America tend to be not good.
Well, as far as I know, there's a very limited number of movies that are allowed to be played in China.
Yeah, it's only like 12.
12 annually or something.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the studios are all fighting pretty hard to make sure that their movie is the one that gets to be released there. So, yeah, that's about all we can talk about with Doctor Strange, and we shall move right along to The Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
The second Guardians of the Galaxy movie has some interesting themes for us to look at. There's an Aryan race of royalty called the Sovereign that first hire the Guardians to do some dirty work for them and then try to destroy the Guardians using remote drones. Then there's the revelation that the space pirates are called the Ravagers and are very upset that Yondu broke their pirate code by trafficking in children on behalf of Ego, the planet. I thought we already knew they were called the Ravagers in the first movie.
Yeah, I think you misread what I wrote, but it's okay. It's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, correct me, because if I read it wrong, we should...
Sorry, I was busy looking something up, and I didn't catch everything until
register
in my head. Anyway. Yeah, so interesting, but very short and sweet.
Yeah, I like the space pirates. They're cool. I mean, I like space pirates in general, so.
Yeah, I do remember we, myself and Ryan, had a little discussion after the movie where we were talking about the idea of adoption being quite prevalent in the movie.
Yeah.
And what I took from it was that they were saying adoption is a perfectly acceptable form of parenting and often is even superior to biological parents in some cases, which I think is appropriate because Yondu was a much better daddy than
yeah, Ego was just a sire and Yondu was a father. That was the message, I think. I guess I'll go ahead and read Spider-Man because that one was so short. So with the only Spider-Man movie that Peter has actually liked so far, because Sony really screwed the pooch with the five they did. Yeah, I think the first one was okay. And
Hated it. I wanted to punch Tobey Maguire in the face every single minute that he was
on. Oh, yeah, he does have a very punchable face, but I think the very first one was decent. The rest were bad, though.
For its time, I suppose it was okay.
Yeah. Plus, come on, that Spider-Man kiss, iconic.
Fuck that.
And J.J. Simmons... Definitely
okay,
one of the best
Simmons,
characters in the movie.
Objectively fantastic.
Yeah, so fucking good.
His J. Jonah Jameson was absolutely fucking brilliant and spot on and exactly the way I remember the animated series as a kid and the comic books and all of it. I loved it.
They should have just made the Homecoming movie, but also with J.J. Simmons in it. Although he's a little too old for that now.
I think they should have just done all the original Spider-Man movies as J. Jonah Jameson movies with Spider-Man as like a background kind of thing. Then I'm
okay with that would be good. Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's actually talk about the movie now. So Tony Stark is not satisfied with building weapons and withholding free energy from Earth. So he's now partnered with the government to take over the cleanup of New York after the Chitauri invasion in the first Avengers movie. This ruins the small companies that had the contracts for the cleanup and eventually forces them into a life of crime. Tony has now used his immense wealth to develop a super soldier suit for what amounts to a child soldier that he has recruited.
So Spider-Man Homecoming, definitely my favorite Spider-Man movie.
I really like the kid that they have playing Spider-Man. He's good.
Yeah, you can actually see that he's actually the first of all the Spider-Man actors that is able to do a lot of his own stunt work, a lot of the acrobatics. He does a lot of that himself. Obviously, there is still CGI. Yeah, the kid's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And the story is more like, it makes it clear that he's like a working class person and not just like, you know, in a classless city like the other movies where,
yeah, you know,
that notion is just erased basically.
There's a lot about it that works, and it works because Sony basically gave the property back to Marvel. They didn't sell it back. They said to them, come, you do the movie and make some of the profit. We'll make most of the profit because we still own the rights. But please fix it because we don't know what the fuck we're doing with the Spider-Man movie. It was great. But yes, obviously, throughout the movie, we get to see that Tony Stark is still a douchebag. So moving right along, let's do Thor Ragnarok quickly. We're getting close to the end, and I think we're doing good time. Thor is just about ready to become full-blown King of Asgard. And right then, he gets Loki to take him to find Odin. Then Odin steps down by fading into mist. And just then, when Thor is about to become King of Asgard, his sister shows up and reveals that the Asgardian Empire was built on a history of war and conquering.
Yeah, so never go full King of Asgard.
Never go full king. Thor gets shipped off to the space equivalent of the Roman Empire to fight in gladiatorial games. On a planet that is the literal garbage patch of the galaxy. Literal. The space vortex is just dumped garbage there the entire time.
Did you say Space Texas dumps garbage there?
No, Space Vortex.
Oh, okay. Well, it could be Space Texas too. You don't know.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know what they call these things. In the end, Thor, who's responsible for bringing about the destruction of Asgard, somehow still remains king, even though the movie makes it pretty clear that the only character fit to lead the Asgardians is Heimdall. So, in my opinion, the movie, like, don't get me wrong, it's for me the best of the three Thor movies. Taika Waititi.
Not a difficult accomplishment, but I think it was... It was an enjoyable movie.
Yeah, it was really fun, very funny, but also kind of political because it's basically talking about how monarchist hereditary politics is really stupid. In the people from Odin's family are just really bad at running things. So, yeah. The only person that actually looks out for the people of Asgard throughout the movie is Heimdall, and he doesn't get to become king, so it's a really stupid system. However, this was interesting. Although Thor remains king by the end of the movie, the royal family has essentially been decimated. The empire is a broken husk, and the civilians have all been rescued for the most part. So it's not a terrible ending, And that's probably due to the fact that Taika Waititi is quite an anti-colonialist. I found a blog or two that he wrote early on in his life, and nice guy. I like him.
Cool.
Even though he now works for Disney.
Well, got to make money, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So we've got two movies to go.
Yeah.
And they are the.
Do you really want me to talk about Black Panther? You can keep going if you want.
No. I want to hear your racist views on the greatest movie in the MCU.
Okay. All right. We're in the final stretch here. So, arguably the most controversial film in the series, Black Panther envisions an Afro-futuristic nation with technology superior to the rest of the world's countries, yet steeped in African traditions. The African monarchy... hold on. Okay, I don't understand the sentence. Anyway, in the country, a king is chosen through traditional fights for supremacy rather than simply maintaining hereditary bloodlines. And this has evolved into an almost post-scarcity utopia, which is undermined by the plight of poverty in surrounding nations and the struggles of black people throughout history across the world. The people of Wakanda have come to exist within a bubble of safety, but the bubble has burst when the child of a Wakandan prince, having grown up in America and excelled as a soldier in the U.S. military, makes his way to Wakanda to challenge T'Challa for the throne. He defeats T'Challa and vows to use the technology and military superiority of Wakanda to end the oppression of black people in the rest of the world. Ultimately, he is defeated by T'Challa, who becomes king again, but not before teaching T'Challa that isolationism is not the right way. Unfortunately, he did not teach him that neoliberalism is also not the right way.
Yeah.
And that Wakanda has an obligation to improve the lives of the oppressed around the world by teaching them to code.
Exactly. Isn't that you code? That saves the world, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's literally why Google exists, is to save the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could rehash the same point that that T and Leslie Lee have made numerous times, which is that this movie basically puts a superhero named Black Panther on the same side as a white CIA agent, which is horribly disgusting and one of the worst things that they could have possibly done with the movie. And that Killmonger was right. But, you know, I don't know.
I do, one of my favorite things about the movie is the fact that Bilbo Baggins and Gollum are technically the movie's two Tolkien white guys. So
that's funny.
I've literally been waiting all week to tell that joke. So. yeah.
Damn.
At the end of the day, I obviously, no movie is perfect, ever. There's no such thing as a perfect movie. Everyone's always going to have opinions about it. But I do feel like, despite its obvious flaws, Black Panther is still one of the strongest movies in the MCU. It's an amazing performance at the box office has shown that audiences don't really want to see just white guys beating up other white guys or indeed people of color.
Well, let's not generalize the audience like that. I mean, you know, some of us may.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to step aside there and say, did you mean some of me?
No, I would have liked the movie a lot better if Killmonger were the hero instead of the villain, but, you know.
I absolutely hated the fact that they killed Killmonger.
Yeah.
And a very big part of me wishes that they hadn't chosen to kill him off, because it doesn't make sense for the character to deliver that very powerful line about slave ships. God, it was hard to even watch.
Yeah.
And then essentially leave T'Challa to fix this ginormous historical oppression without really understanding the problem. Whereas Killmonger did. He understood very clearly what the problem is with modern society and the systemic racism that is basically running the world. Let's finish off by talking about the latest movie, which is, of course, Avengers Infinity War. Like I said, it's the latest release, and it's the culmination of a decade of movies. As Marvel put it, it is the most ambitious crossover in cinematic history. But they obviously, the people who said that obviously never saw
Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers.
Exactly. That was fucking amazing. Okay, so yeah, we're talking now about Avengers Malthusian War, in which we meet Thanos, which we've already met before, but he never really left his chair before. He's also known as the Mad Titan, which he doesn't really earn in the MCU. If you read the comic books, it becomes a lot more clear. They go into a crap load of detail about his motivations and everything. In the MCU, his main goal is to collect the 6 Infinity Stones that together will provide ultimate power, which he wants to use to eliminate half the universe's population, simply because he thinks that this will reduce overall suffering. Never mind the emotional turmoil of losing your loved ones, or the fact that this entire genocide will be undone within 2 generations of reproduction. Thanos.
Yeah, and
is
that he's omnipotent and could just end suffering.
Exactly. Thanos is essentially the living embodiment of the fundamental misunderstanding within layman interpretations of economic thought. Those interpretations, of course, being overpopulation has anything to do with population numbers, and that scarcity is related to physical resource availability. It's not. Scarcity is the disparity between supply and demand, and is only an economic problem within economics that seek to distribute resources using supply and demand, and obviously the political systems that support them. Much like Malthus, when was Malthus? That was 1700s?
Yeah, either 1700s or 17th century.
Yeah, might even have.
But here's the thing. I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure from what I've read about Malthus, his concern with overpopulation wasn't like overpopulation will cause us all to run out of resources. It was uncontrolled population growth will make poor people suffer, because resources are limited, and so we either need to increase resources or slow the reproduction rate of the poor. Whereas his opponents, I think, were actually more elitist than him and had like zero concern for them. They were just, you know, they thought that he was just wrong about this pattern.
Well, Malthus is... He was essentially trying to inspire the Industrial Revolution. He was trying to say that we need to exploit planetary resources more. So when people say that Thanos is Malthus, obviously it's a big misnomer based purely on the idea that overpopulation means whatever they want it to mean.
He's Malthusian in the sense of like the colloquialism that we have developed over this huge amount of time to describe the idea that overpopulation is the cause of suffering throughout the world, and so we need to do eugenics, basically.
Yeah.
But he's not Malthus himself, I don't think.
Indeed, definitely not. At the end of the day, the parallels between Thanos and Malthus are difficult to actually draw. To say, these are Thanos' beliefs, those are Malthus' beliefs, see how they are accurate how they are equivalent, it's almost impossible to do. Also, Malthus looked at everything from a political and economic viewpoint, whereas Thanos is very much about the biology of things. He's busy saying that biologically we're overpopulating everything, whereas Malthus did understand that the scarcity was related to supply and demand, and what he was suggesting was to increase supply, which would then reduce demand. Even though both of them were essentially incorrect, because economics, as Malthus understood it, was garbage, and biology...
Well, I think in his time it was more accurate than it is now, honestly.
And I suppose that's fair.
Yeah, they did have some batshit ideas, but they at least acknowledged the fundamental reality that the state creates the economy.
Yeah, because, I mean, what else back then?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so nonetheless, this is the basis of the movie. And instead of anyone giving Thanos a lesson on the overpopulation myth, we get a 2.5-hour movie that has raked in nearly $2 billion at the box office, breaking multiple records and confirming Disney as the as basically the sole remaining superpower in Hollywood. Okay, so for those that have been following the Disney-Fox story, Fox is voting on July the 10th. They've got a shareholder vote to decide on whether or not to accept the Disney offer to buy them, and if they vote no, which Fox has not recommended to its shareholders, but if they do vote no, then Comcast might stand a chance at buying stuff. And I follow Donald Trump on Twitter just because I need a laugh as much as everyone. And he's really been going after Bob Iger from Disney over the last week, after the Roseanne show got canceled.
Oh, yeah, because Disney owns ABC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's been demanding apologies.
Bob Iger. Wee, wee, wee.
Exactly.
A blue.
Which is interesting for me. I don't know if you remember a while back we did the Disney-Fox merger during our Disney versus Netflix episode. And there it was kind of clear that Iger and Trump were actually buddy-buddy. So yeah. I've been finding all of this very interesting. So 10th of July we get to then find out whether or not Marvel is eventually going to acquire the rest of their non-Spider-Man properties. Obviously, Sony still owns the Spider-Man properties. That'll make for good movies in the future when we get to watch the Avengers beat up on the X-Men and vice versa. And maybe we can get a decent Fantastic Four movie.
Nah. No. Shut up. No fucking way.
Dude, I want a decent Fantastic Four movie.
Never going to happen. Never going to happen.
I hate you, Ryan. So I have included some extra tidbits, one or two links in our show notes. I don't really want to cover them.
We're running very long now.
One of them basically talks about the bad press that Ike Perlmutter got right before Disney acquired Marvel. And so all of that bad press attention kind of went away when Disney bought them. The other talks about something that I thought would be more prevalent, and that's weapons development sponsorship for Marvel. They had a very controversial team up with Northrop Grumman a while back, and that eventually got cancelled, thank God. But given that you've got so many weapons developers throughout the MCU, I genuinely thought there would be a lot more mention.
Product placement.
Product placement galore. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
I think that's our episode for today. We've made fantastic time, given the fact that we had to cover nearly a decade of movies and nearly two a year.
Yeah.
Well done to us. Well done to us.
Well done to Peter for doing all this work on going through every single Marvel movie, which if I had to do that, I would probably end my life.
I'm not going to lie to you. I really don't want to have anything to do with Marvel for a long time now. I can wait. I can wait for September, October, November, there or thereabouts for Ant-Man and the Wasp movie.
Yeah. All right, so if you enjoyed that, you can find us on Twitter at NeighborSciPod. I'm Handle of Rye. Peter is BookCheekite. We have a Patreon, a Facebook, and an Instagram, and they're all slash or at NeighborScience. We have a website, postscarcitymagazine.com. That's where you can find the show notes for all of our newer episodes. The older episodes, I did not put show notes, I didn't attach them to those episodes, so they're just on my computer somewhere. But for all the newer ones, we have our full show notes, so you can see everything that we plan to talk about, everything that we read about, if you're interested in learning more about whatever subject it is, if you want to read about whichever movies we skipped over, Doctor Strange and I don't know, some other one, a Hulk or something. You can check out Peter's notes. I will attach those to the episode. And also, there's a zine on the site, and you can search podcast by tag. So if you want to look for a specific subject, we have tags on all our episodes, and you can search that way. I think that's everything, right?
Yeah.
We have a new Patreon person. So thank you to, I believe it was Matthew, right?
Are you asking me? I don't have access to the Patreon account.
Well, kind of responsibility. Thanks to Matthew and Emma for being patrons for our podcast. And I think that's it.
Thank you very much for listening, everyone. And we will chat to you again next week.
Bye.